This is The Guardian.
I'm Grace Dent, and this is Comfort Eating from The Guardian. A podcast where we pay homage to the lesser celebrated foods in life. Because even as a restaurant critic, I believe the food that matters most is often that snack you cobble together when you're curled up on the sofa. Each week, I ask my guest to lift the lid on what comfort foods have seen them through their lives. Because you can tell a lot about a person from what they eat behind closed doors.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, people. You'll hear that I'm not in my kitchen today. I am actually crossing London in a car as we are recording today's episode of Comfort Eating at my guest's house, as they have a tiny little baby. Apparently, you can't leave them on their own all day. Anyway, I'm just wolfing down some Watsits and a delicious can of iron brew to get my energy up, as today I will be chatting to the ray of sunshine that is Laura Whitmore. She really is the host with the most. She has a Radio 5 live show, a podcast, and she also does a little show called Love Island. She lives with her husband, the comedian Ian Sterling, and I am so happy to be being welcomed into her home today. Laura is a really massive name in TV, but there's lots of things I don't know about her life outside of the public eye. I think we're nearly here, actually. That's so good. Watsits just always hit the spot, don't they? Just poured iron brew right down my face. Look at it. I can't turn up at Laura's house looking like this. Have you got a wet one? Laura Whitmore, welcome to Comfort Eating.
Thank you, Grace Dent.
I always like it when I see you at an event because it's somebody that I can actually talk to.
Oh, thank God. I think I met you at, was it a Jamie Oliver thing?
Oh my God,
do you remember that?
Yes, we met at a Jamie Oliver party.
And I think I did that thing when, you know, you're too over familiar with someone because you recognise their face. And I was like, hi, how are you? And I think it was only about 10 minutes in I realised, oh, I don't actually know Grace.
This is where I get to find out what people really eat behind closed doors. Now, I'm dying to know, what have you got for me today? There doesn't seem to be much being made in the kitchen, I'm going to say. The delicious aromas are not happening. What's going on? What are we going to be eating today?
I think with comfort food, hold on, shall I get it out?
I can't see it. Is there anything?
You know, can I just say, right, when I was asked about this, this isn't what I initially suggested because I thought this was quite a normal thing. You don't smell anything because there was no cooking involved. So it's like snacks. You know those things when you're at home and you're like, I want something.
Do you know, it feels like there's a lot of apologising happening already before you've got it.
You know what? I wanted to set the scene, Grace. Set the scene. I'm home alone. I want to eat something now. And you know from all the parties, I'm still giving a story before I show you. Sometimes you get canapés. And I remember when I was a kid, I thought canapés were so fancy when you'd see them in films. I kind of used to make my own canapés.
Oh my God. No.
So, I'm not done yet. So, I've got a raw mushroom here, right? And what you can do is, you can take the middle out. like so, the little stalk. We've got some squeezy real mayonnaise. And then you can squirt it. Oh, my excuse, God. Pardon me.
That was actually Laura. That wasn't the mayonnaise.
Like that, right? And you can keep this.
No.
And you can put it back in like that. And then you can take it, rid of it and just do it. That is beautiful.
Okay.
Now, I didn't know this was a weird thing.
I feel like I want to get a social worker. Are you all right? Like,
how long did that take me to make? Seconds.
Now, this, if you haven't worked out what's actually happening, Laura's just brought a punnet of raw mushrooms. She's taken the stem out of one and filled the hollow up with mayonnaise and then stuck the stem back in. Never in my life have I ever seen anything like that. So this is the part of the show where I usually test and taste.
Give it a go. Give it a go. Give it a go. Go on.
It's cold.
Yeah, it's fridge. It's raw.
It's fridge cold.
It's good to feel. Put hairs on your chest.
It's mayonnaise, Laura.
Do you not like mayonnaise? I mean, I love condiments. Do you not like mayonnaise? Do you like mayonnaise? Do you like mushrooms? Why wouldn't you like both together?
When did you start eating these?
I think I was quite young. Coming home from school, maybe, wanted a little snack. Never really liked sandwiches. So it was my version of canapés.
So
I might go in for another one.
Oh my God, you're having another one actually voluntarily.
See, I just think this is normal. So maybe I might be living my life wrong. You don't have to wash up afterwards. There's no dishes. And you pop it in there. If you want, you can sprinkle a little bit of cheese on top. And I just have it as a little snack in between. And I think, again, it just looks fancy. It looks almost, you know, when you stuff tomatoes with things.
It's the fact that you keep saying it looks fancy. And it looks fancy.
Do you not think that, like, you could have a tray of that at a dinner party? Do you know, welcoming people into your home?
You cannot have a tray of these at a dinner party. So this is a podcast all about comfort. Mm. Now, I've been upstairs to use the loo and you've got a TV in the bathroom.
Is that why you were in there for about an hour? I was a bit worried. Yeah. What is she doing in my toilet?
You're the host of the UK's most talked about reality TV show. Is it reality telly that you watch?
I love reality TV. I'm a huge fan of like the housewives of event, no matter where they're from. I watched the Jersey one, which is like the UK less showbiz version of it. Brilliant. Obsessed.
You know, I like the housewives because I think it says so much about female friendship.
Do you know what it does?
I think it's not as throwaway as people think.
But I think that for all reality shows, and I've spoken about Love Island in that regard before I even worked on the show. I remember once my mom, I think it was season three, she started watching it because Ian, I was dating a guy who was doing the voiceover. She was like, I want to see what he does. I was like, oh God. So she watched it. And then my auntie Anna started watching it. And then a few of the aunties were watching it. And then they used to have calls about the show. And my mother, she put it really well once when she said, it's like, it's a really good insight into people and relationships. Mm. Women are manipulative. Men are just stupid. Even with Casa Amor, which is when the guys go away and there's other girls there, it happens every year. And, you know, every year and working on the show now, they say, that's really mean you do that. And I'm like, we don't tell them to go off with another girl. It happens every year. And every year some guy messes up. And it's just an insight into men, into women. I'm not saying everyone is the same, but, you know, just the different types of relationships. There is unrequited love. Mm. There's friendships there, there's bromances, and there's girl code and bro code. And you're right, similar with the housewives, there's definitely insights that we can learn about. It's not just completely fairy tale.
So you're in the bath, you're watching reality television. Do you take snacks into the bath?
Yeah. Well, I don't know if you noticed, but there's a slab of wood across the bath, and it also has a little holder for a glass of wine or a cup of tea. Now, when I go into the bath, I can be in there for over an hour. I once had a Chinese takeaway in the bath, and I remember when I was emptying the bath out, there was bits of rice in the drain. Not ideal. Pulling hair out and the rice. Beautiful. So, yeah, I'll bring snacks in there.
Mm-hmm. You've actually taken the Chinese takeaway into the bath.
Yeah. Do you know what works well in the bath? Raw mushrooms, because they float.
You've got to let that go. Honestly. It's like...
You didn't even finish it.
Has anyone other than you ever finished one of these in front of you, though?
I've never really thought about this as being an odd thing until very, very recently. Ian just kept saying, what are you doing? And I'm like... I really think it's just him who thinks this is weird. But no, apparently this is a weird thing. I've done it since I was a kid.
Your husband is the comedian Ian Sterling. He is the much loved narrator on Love Island.
Did he write this?
I'll say this again. He is the much loved narrator on Love Island. But your story starts before the show. You said that Ian was living like a student.
Oh, yes.
When you first started dating in 2017. Was there a student diet that went along with that?
Yes. I feel I'm one not to judge after trying to make you eat some raw mushrooms and mayonnaise. However, when I first met Ian, he was living in what looked like a bedsit. It was like pot noodles, pasta. I think he lived between a Greggs and a McDonald's. And he said sometimes he would... Actually, no, the Greggs McDonald's was on the same road because he said sometimes he'd get a sausage roll from Greggs on the walk to McDonald's. So...
Make that journey fun.
Do you know what I mean? Just to get the tummy juices going. Do you know what's been brilliant? Obviously, it was a terrible time, but lockdown made us cook food. And we learned a lot. And Ian is a brilliant cook. I'm brilliant at eating food. And I think we got better because we always ate things quickly. The mushrooms, I joke, but they're comfort food that I could eat quickly. So everything in my fridge was always, what can I eat quickly? I didn't have time to put effort into things. And I think he was the same. He's very good at it. And I think he really enjoys the ritual of cooking. But everything he had was like quick pot noodles.
I think men have always got to be a bit, if they're single when you meet them, have always got to be a bit studenty in that studenty place, you know? I think that it's a fixer-upper.
It's a fixer-upper.
You know?
There is hope.
So I think that when you go into a bar, you should always look for the man that smells of washing basket.
Sniff them out. Sniff them out. Also, Ian is a touring comedian, so I think he ate a lot and still does, you know, in service stations.
Oh, God, yeah.
So that's probably where the love of Greggs came from. I actually got him for Christmas, a voucher for Greggs, to put into the Christmas stocking because I thought, you know what, it'll be useful.
On Christmas morning, he opened up a Greggs voucher from you. Mm. Oh.
That's love.
Your mum brought you up as an only child in Bray, a town just outside Dublin, and she is one of 13 siblings. So were they there
the whole time?
It sounds like crowd control.
It's strange because there's a juxtaposition between my family, which was my parents weren't together. And I have a close relationship with both parents, but I just grew up with my mom and I'd see my dad every Wednesday and every second weekend. And there's a lovely relationship there. And I had a very happy childhood looking back. I think at the time it wasn't conventional. Nowadays, no one's parents are together anymore. But back then, I think I was the only one in school whose parents weren't together. And
but you grew up with your mom.
But I grew up with my mom. However, then Christmas Day, there'd be like 15 of us around the table. And I was very close to my cousins. And they were kind of like big sisters to me. And so I was kind of Christmas meant, and food and big dinners, kind of bringing everyone together, which was different to just me and my mom in the house.
What do you do at Christmas for lunch?
Christmas is just eating the whole day. There's a lot of visiting. So you go around the houses and you have your bit of sherry and you have like your Pringles and dip and you move along. And then there's the turkey. And my auntie Teresa always cooks the turkey, except last year because we were in London. We couldn't go back to Ireland, which is the first year ever. We actually had Christmas dinner here at this table.
Oh,
I don't want to do that again. That's a lot of pressure. And also Ian had his, everyone has their thing, the side dishes. So we had about three or four different types of potato. I was lucky that my mom was over here already and staying with us. So we had an Irish mammy, so it felt a little bit authentic. But normally it's Auntie Teresa who cooks the turkey, and it's the biggest turkey you've ever seen. And then the roast potatoes, they're so good. I just feel, not to be one big stereotype, but we just know how to make good potatoes in Ireland. I just grew up that when you would have, it's just in the house, that when mom would cook a meal, you'd have your meat, you'd have your veg, and you'd have your potatoes. And even over here now, sometimes I'll put a salmon on or a tuna steak and I'll do a little bit of veg on the side. And if my mom's over, she's like, where's the potatoes? Because you'd always have potatoes. I'm like, you don't have to have potatoes with every meal. But growing up, that's what you did. And we did them well.
So when you were a little girl and you're saying there's all these aunties and all these cousins, and you would have to go to people's houses and do all the different houses, going in and making loads of small talk, did that kind of put you in good stead to be in media and be an interviewer? Because, you know, you must have been very socially good from an early age.
Weirdly, I was really quiet. I was actually, out of everyone in the house, I'd probably be the quiet. I always like putting on, with my cousins, we'd put on little plays and we'd kind of go off to a room and put on little plays. And there's my uncle's old VHS recorder where we used to do Dad's ads. I remember once we got his shirt, we put ketchup on it, and Cousin Claire pretended to be Shane Ritchie, and I pretended to be the woman at the door going, I can't get the ketchup out. And I don't think we got the ketchup out of that shirt, actually, in hindsight.
It's still stuffed
somewhere.
Stuffed behind a couch somewhere.
So we used to put little plays on, but I was quite quiet, you know, in my own little world. I used to like, you know, doing my own little shows and putting little things on, just ourselves. But when it came to like big rooms, I felt I used to kind of sit back and watch and take it in that way. So I think when I did become a television presenter and do stuff on telly, I always loved drama, but I definitely wasn't the loudest person in the room considering how loud I am now.
Did you want to be famous?
Not famous, but I wanted to perform. And I wanted to tell stories. I love stories. So I have a copybook of where I used to write stories and I used to make up little stories. And I love the idea of storytelling, be it asking questions like you are now or performing them and doing plays. And I love that buzz. And I don't know, maybe there is an element of that feeling, like I always love live theatre. I love live telly. So maybe it is that feeling of getting something back. And I don't know if that's fame or just the buzz of being on stage or the adrenaline that you get. And I remember mom is very spiritual. And I think she went to some sort of, I don't know, it was a tarot card reader or something. And they said, oh, you've got a daughter. And I must have been a baby or a kid at the time. And they said, she'll be known from telly. My mom said that when I was younger. So I think that was always in the back of my head. I could have been known from Crime Watch. We don't know. Could have been from anything. But maybe that was in the back of my head. So maybe, I don't know, there is something nice getting recognition from what you do.
Your parents separated when you were little, but remained very good friends.
Yeah, they actually were never together since I was born. So I just thought that's what parents were like, to be honest.
When you and your dad spent time together, where did you go to?
So my dad had me every second Wednesday. Dad was great. Where would you bring a kid?
Well,
where could you bring them?
Did he take you to the play park and then a museum?
He took me to an Indian takeaway. This was a time like in the early 90s when there wasn't a lot, like that was quite fancy. Yeah. There weren't a lot of Indian restaurants. And
also not a type of place that you would take a little kid. You didn't see any children most people would have believed that you couldn't actually give children chili.
No.
At that point, I'm talking about Irish and British people, a lot of them
and
in the 90s.
And you weren't getting your potatoes, your veg and your meat on the plate at all.
No roast potatoes.
No roast potatoes.
So hang on, how old are you and you're...
Like young. Like I just remember daddy to always bring me to like these places and I go into school and say, oh, I had a chicken tikka masala, and they'd be like, a what? Like now there's loads, but at that time, That was rare. And Dad used to get vindaloo. So I remember tasting that as a kid. My mind blown. I used to go korma. Safe.
Yeah.
Safe. But this, for a child, that's quite fancy. None of my friends had had like chicken korma at that stage. Or king prawn korma.
It feels like Wednesdays were a special time.
Wednesday was great.
You've said that at school you were sassy.
I was a nerd. I was a nerd. I was not cool at all. But do you know, you're in that group where I look back, like all kids kind of have a little bit of bullying, but I felt like I was quite safe in that I wasn't cool enough, but I wasn't in the complete, like, I was kind of like a nerd. So no one really picked on me because I was too busy staying back to do debate club. Do you know, like,
oh,
you're kind
God.
Of with my other friends who are all massive nerds. So we were just in our bubble. So we thought we were cool because we had each other.
Were you in debating club?
Yeah. French, English and Irish. But I think I did that because my mom worked and my dad worked. Yeah. So it was more just kind of to fill time after school. So I did everything that I could possibly do.
So
and
what?
I loved an argument. But I was quite happy in my ignorance. Like in my little group, we were cool. I didn't see any boys to be mocked or laughed at or to have no interest in because I didn't see them for them to like have no interest in me. They didn't exist. So
it was before.
There's no social media, thank God.
So you didn't.
And I always say it's really difficult for young people now because I wasn't invited. Looking back, there was all these parties and people drinking and, you know, drinking with a bottle in the field. I didn't know this was happening. So I never missed out on that. These days, you can see if you missed a party. But then I didn't know. I missed everything. I missed loads of stuff. I was too busy doing, like, debating.
You're doing debating.
Or staying back late, like, to help a teacher.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You graduated from university in Dublin after studying journalism.
Yeah.
And then you entered the presenting competition Pick Me for MTV.
Yeah.
And you won it.
Yeah.
You moved to London.
Yeah.
You start working as a presenter across the MTV network.
Mm-hmm.
How does living in London change the kind of comfort food that you eat?
London was exciting. Camden is exciting. Now, don't forget, I did have a little taste of showbiz lifestyle with going on Wednesdays to the Curry House. However, going to Camden, the markets, the stalls, the tasting. I used to, and I didn't have a lot of money then because, believe it or not, when you win a competition for MTV, it doesn't necessarily pay great.
No.
There's a reason why they do a competition to get the new presenter.
Yeah.
Brilliant opportunity. I met, I interviewed everyone. I traveled the world. Incredible. And what I used to do, I used to walk through Camden Markets and the Stables Market, and they used to give testers of things.
Yeah.
You can walk through that whole market and get a full meal without paying for a thing. Just so you know.
You can.
You can.
I mean, I wouldn't.
And they'd be like, would you like to try this sweet and sour chicken piece or whatever it would be? And I'd be like, ooh, yeah. Mm. And then like the following day, would you like, oh, yeah, I've never tasted this before. And they're like, chicken, you say? Fried chicken. I would love to taste it.
Seriously, though, you must have been tasting things you'd never tasted before.
Just, do you know what it was? Choice. Just choice. Yeah. And I actually worked a pretty regular job for a TV job. I worked in MTV, the studios, which were Holy Crescent. They're still there. And what a great area, you know, the Holy Arms is around the corner. Mm. And it was like, this is at the time of like Amy Winehouse would be about and the music scene. And we'd be going to gigs all the time. And And like at lunchtime, they'd be like, so what are you going to have for lunch? No bloody idea what to have for lunch. Just like so much choice. For me, Pret was fancy because we didn't have Pret at home. So the choices of sandwiches, and I'm not a huge like sandwich eater. But then I'd go there and I'm like, oh, these are fancy sandwiches. So for me, just that choice, I'd spend most of my time thinking about what to have, and then my lunch break would be over. Yeah. Weird having a lunch break when you work in TV, because I was quite regular because I was doing MTV News every day. So I kind of had this regular walking into work. I used to walk the canal to work from my flat, go in, record, then you'd go and have your lunch and then maybe go and interview like 50 Cent or something. You know, it's normal.
Reality TV was becoming a large part of your career. But as you said, it's also something that you really love. You enjoy it. Mm-hmm. Like
as a fan punter. As to watch it, yeah, as a punter.
The whole genre, of course, not excluding Love Island, mm-hmm. it is in some ways, it is a popularity contest a lot of the time. Do you end up worrying about that? Do you worry about people's insecurities that are involved in it?
I guess I always just watched it myself as just a fan of different shows. Same way I'm a celebrity and all that. And it's weird because I got my first big job from a competition.
Yeah.
It wasn't a public vote. It was I entered the competition not really knowing what I'd done. And I guess I lived in a world where when I started on MTV, when I got the job, like Twitter wasn't really a thing then. So if people didn't like me, I didn't know. Going back to being a kid, not knowing if I wasn't invited to the parties. Would I survive starting out now knowing if people liked me or not? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think it's tougher now. And I worry about the next generation. I have two younger half brothers in their early 20s. And I'm like, shit, it's hard. I feel I'm a bit older now and I can kind of, I've got my head screwed on. I've got my good people around me. I think if you're young and new and the first thing you do on TV, you can have everyone judge you and see what they have to say straight away. I think that's really tough. But I think it's new.
You went from being a TV fan to finding yourself right in the middle of the UK media machine. How does the reality compare to what you expected?
It's a bit shite.
Why is it shite?
Well, it's weird because I won a competition to interview people. So I guess I had a different insight into it. Like when I first started, I remember being one of the first people to interview Katy Perry and Ed Sheeran before he brought out A-Team, Katy before she brought out I Kissed a Girl. I remember like, this is a new American artist. And you kind of, and then I remember seeing from a different side, I mentioned I lived in Camden, I could see Amy Winehouse walking around. I remember going for my lunch in Camden Markets and sampling the food and seeing a group of men basically look stalking this one woman, you know, with the cameras and the flashes and the lights. And I remember seeing it from the other side of the road going, Jesus Christ, that looks shite. Like,
yeah.
I was always very wary of that. And I think seeing it from that side, because, you know, I won the MTV competition, had a job. I felt like I worked an office job. It was like Monday to Friday. People weren't really that interested in me. But I had this lovely job. And I think maybe when I got the I'm a Celebrity job, I remember being asked by the press team, if I would do, they're like, oh, all the presenters, not Ant and Dec, but like normally the backstage show, the girls normally do, you know, a shot at the beach. And I'm like, what do you mean a shot at the beach?
Yeah.
And I said no to that. And I don't think they understood why I said no, but I said, if I ever...
Is that one of those kind of controlled paparazzi things?
Yeah, and nothing against that, that's what you want to do. But I had seen the Camden set and I was like, if I enter into that world, I'm very scared that I won't be able to control it. Even at, this is in my 20s, I think I got that job in my mid-20s.
So you're in that world now?
Well, I don't, I've never set up a pap shot. I'm very anti-paparazzi. If it's outside going into my work, if it's a red carpet, I get it, it's my workplace. It's outside my house, it's not okay.
Have you had people outside the house?
I've had people outside the house. I've had papers announce I've had a baby before I've told people I had a baby. And that I find a lot. And I also used to see how I was being talked about was different to how my male co-presenters were being talked about. But I feel like I gradually, this wasn't something that was sprung on me. I think now with reality TV, you can get very famous very fast. I was kind of that girl from MTV News that would pop up on the screen for a few minutes. And then I was, the girl from the backstage show for I'm a Celeb. And then, then Laura from this. And I think it kind of progressed slowly. And then I got to a stage
was
where...
Was that kind of a line in the sand, though, when there was people outside the house?
Yes.
Yeah.
And I have spoken about that a lot. And what really scary is when you don't see them. You just see a picture of yourself and you've no idea when that was taken. And it was just probably someone in a car sitting outside your house. Mm. That I don't think is okay. And that freaks me out because it takes me back to those days of Camden watching Amy Winehouse, who was just getting on about her day. And, you know, I just felt like you wanted to protect somebody and you just have these people waiting for you to fall over or trying to get a picture up your skirt when they used to do that. I've had that. Now they can't do that. But that was the time that we lived in. And it's only now at this stage, I'm like, we can speak up and say that's not okay. Because just because it's happened to other girls in the past doesn't mean it's okay. But it's hard. It's overwhelming. And now you have this online world that is moving and growing so vastly that we can't really keep up with it. Mm. So I don't really know what way it's going to go.
Last year, after your fellow TV presenter and your friend, Caroline Flack, took her own life, you paid tribute to her on your Five Live show. And in that you said, you don't have to tear down someone to feel good about yourself. And that was nearly 2 years ago. How do you reflect now on how we all relate to each other? Do you think anything's changed?
Sadly, no. Mm. I really don't.
Yeah.
And that's hard because I think there's still a lot of anger in the world. And I think the press still tends to prefer to go with a negative headline. It's hard because you would hope after something as shocking that, you know, and something as horrific as what happened, if I can't even believe how long ago it is now, does it still feel so fresh, that some change will happen. But I sometimes have days of hope and I feel like, you know, we've got voices now. Social media can be a dark place, but it's also a place of community and uniting and speaking up. Yeah. And if I want to say something, I can put it straight up on my social media and I feel I have some control that way. But the way we talk about each other online is not okay.
When you talk back on social media, and I find this interesting because I never do.
Does it affect you? Do you think it does? Because sometimes I'm told, don't say anything, but I'm like,
I don't say anything ever.
But
then it just gets bigger and bigger.
But does it
hurt?
Does it still, can you brush it off, or does it affect you?
Depends. Sometimes it goes straight over me and I can just see it, and then other times it'll take me under for like a week or so.
It's hard because you're right, it does kind of open you out, and there's certain papers I refuse to work with, and because of that, they will come for me. And it's hard. Yeah. And it's hard because I'll refuse to do an interview with them because of how they've treated friends of mine in the past or how they've written about them. And until they change, or until they apologise, or until they become better, I'm not going to work with them. But because of that, I'm fair game. And that's hard because it's exhausting and it's tiring. But if you don't stand up, it's not going to get better. And if you don't say something, change won't happen. But it's just knowing what battles to fight.
Thank you for talking about all that with me. Do you want to finish on something happy?
Yeah, mushrooms. Not those kind. Just the raw kind from Waitrose.
So now that you've led him away from his student days, what's the ideal date night food if you're having a night in?
I love fish. I don't eat a lot of meat. I haven't eaten red meat since I was 15. But I think growing up in Ireland, living by the sea, I probably took it for granted at the time, but we always have beautiful fish. Mm. And I remember about 2 years ago, I went to the Galway Oyster Festival. We were shucking oysters and the mussels there are beautiful. So I love good seafood and Ian loves pasta. So together we fuse them together and it's seafood linguine. Quick, easy. Once you've got good fish.
Do you make it?
Yeah. And it doesn't take a lot. But
what's the technique?
There. See, also, you're going to laugh at this. Sometimes me and Ian will just have pasta by itself with a little bit of oil on it, a little bit of garlic and a little bit of salt and pepper.
If the pasta's good,
yeah,
then you can get away with that.
Yeah.
But not if it's dried.
Actually, Ian likes the fresh pasta, but that's because it's quicker.
Yeah.
It's quicker. You don't have to leave it for as long. So yeah, you get good fresh pasta. Good. If the ingredients are good, it doesn't take a lot of time. So you just need good fish, good pasta, whip it in, a little bit of olive oil. He likes it spicy. Sometimes you put a bit of chili in there. I like a little bit of spice, but not as much as he does. And keep it quite simple. Nothing too creamy.
I love it when you start talking about cooking together, because that's when your eyes totally, your it's face fun. Totally lights up about your relationship when you start talking
about the food. Let's be honest, guys.
This episode of Comfort Eating was produced by Jack Claremont. The series producer is Leia Green, and the executive producer is Kathy Drysdale. Music and sound design is by Axel Gacoutier, and this episode was mixed by Sammy Elanani. If you like Comfort Eating, please leave us a review. You can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts so you never miss an episode. And use the hashtag ComfortEatingPod to get in touch about the podcast or share your own comfort foods. I'll be back on Tuesday.
This is The Guardian.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.